coming to you loud and clear from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in again for Tom Clark. And as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. And as usual, Zorba, we have some great topics to talk about.
Really interesting research on eating for pleasure, eating for hunger. When you say you're hungry, are you really hungry or are you just eating because you want to eat because the stuff looks so good or tastes so good? We'll talk about some interesting neural pathways. And then we're going to talk about graphic designs on cigarettes, something they do in Canada and other countries that maybe we should do here and how it affects the smokers. Remember, we still have, depending on your state, anywhere between 15 and 20% of the people who still smoke, and smoking is still a major cause of death, especially among those people. So whatever we can do to make a change really does make a difference.
All right. And what is the special recipe today?
Barley salad with dates. We don't think very much about barley, but barley, which is something my mother made all the time, dates, which are commonly used in a lot of Middle Eastern foods. This is a variation of a salad you may want to try. It's always good to have something that you want to try that's different. This is an easy, very easy recipe. Something that even Tom in his legendary kitchen could actually take care of.
All right. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where you can leave a voicemail anytime with your question for Dr. Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might just show up on an upcoming episode of the show. That's 800-462-7413. And of course, later, like Zorba said, we'll hear from Chef Tom Clark in his magical and mystical and I guess mystical is enough to say that. Mystical kitchen.
Magical
for the,
and mystical.
Right? Is it mystical?
You got
mysterious?
It. Of course. It is. Of course. It's definitely, there's no doubt. It's mythical. Not
mythical.
Just mystical.
There you go.
It's mythical.
That's a lot
it's
of M
magical,
words.
Magical, mythical, and mystical. And if you say that three or four times, we'll just see, Carl, how well you can actually say it.
All right, Zorba. This show is stacked with listener voicemails, so we better get to it. Let's kick things off with a caller in Florida, USA.
It's sufficient to have antibodies versus getting the vaccination, the COVID vaccination. Does that suffice? Because I do have antibodies. Most people don't get that test done because it's a blood test, but I'm under the impression that that would be sufficient. It just doesn't make sense to get a vaccination if you've got the antibodies. So I'd like to ask that question. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great question. Simple answer, no. Now the question is, why is it no? Well, first of all, one reason it's no is that we don't know how many antibodies you need to actually have to actually give you sufficient immunization. So for instance, we know in varicella, chickenpox, we can do an antibody titer, and we know what that means. We know the same in measles, and we know the same in mumps. We know the same in hepatitis. Now, if you look at chickenpox or varicella, for instance, we know that the antibodies begin to flag when you're older, and lo and behold, you get shingles because you never got rid of the chickenpox virus. Just stayed in your body. Now, let's go over to COVID for a second. We have no idea what a sufficient level of antibody is to actually protect you from COVID. And we know there's breakthrough COVID, especially on people who have had COVID before. So the answer is, get your immunization, boost your antibodies, no matter what they are. And that's why we don't test for antibodies before we give immunization, because basically the test only shows you came into contact with it. It doesn't show how well you fought it off.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's keep the voicemails rolling. This is a caller who lives right here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, Dr. Zorba. I have chronic fatigue, or specifically exercise intolerance. So when I do anything physically exerting, I'm left like very tired and have brain fog and body pain for the next few days to a week. So I'm wondering if you have any advice on how to move. I know exercise is so important and like it's something I would like to be able to do. So I'm wondering if you have any advice on how to incorporate movement or exercise into my life, or get to a place where I could be have a lot of physical exertion. Thanks so much.
It is really a tough issue with people with chronic fatigue. They often have to search around and find an exercise that kind of works for them because they find that they're more tired than they expect to be because they have chronic fatigue syndrome. So doing something that you and I, Carl, such as walking down the street, might find, they might get fatigue after a very short period of time. I mean, it's a really problematic issue. So my recommendation is start with something that's very low impact. Start with yoga. See what yoga does. If you find you can do yoga, then do something like Tai Chi. Move over to Tai Chi, which often has more physical movement because you're standing up more with Tai Chi than yoga. And I think Tai Chi would be the next step. After that, you might want to look at swimming to see whether or not you could swim, because once again, you're buoyant in the water. So it does something when you don't have gravity to work against. And then if you work with swimming, then start to go onto a walking program. But the real issue is taking little baby steps to see what you can do. Let's say you can do 10 minutes of some exercise. After a week, see if you can do 11 minutes, then see if you can do 12 minutes. And it's that slow buildup, especially with chronic fatigue, that can really give you the results that you are looking for.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave a message with a question for Dr. Zorba to answer. And we're going to get back to those voicemails in just a bit. But first, Zorba, some new research out that looks at the differences between eating for hunger versus eating for pleasure.
Well, now, Carl, when was the last time you actually were starving? You said, I'm just starving. I just have an enormous appetite. When was the last time?
I'm still doing this intermittent fasting thing, actually. So it's almost daily. I wouldn't say I'm starving myself, but, you know, around 2 or 3 o'clock, I usually hold out till then. And I'm pretty hungry by then. So I wouldn't call it starving, though.
But actually, the idea is that it turns out, according to this new research out of Baylor College of Medicine, we actually have two different pathways. We have a serotonin pathway that actually, in both cases in the midbrain, one that works on pleasure from food, foods that we like, one that actually works on appetite. And they're two completely different pathways that they looked from functional MRI exams and from biochemical analyses of actually what's going on within the brain. So with your intermittent fasting, all of a sudden you are getting in touch with hunger, whereas when you don't intermittently fast, you're kind of maybe hungry, but that food looks really good.
Yeah.
And that is the whole problem. You know, if you look at the obesity epidemic that we have, not only in this country, but worldwide, it's really because of the inexpensive production of calories that have occurred over the last 30 to 50 years. We now produce calories that we never produced in terms of food, in terms of things like chicken in this country. And we have not gotten in touch with, we get in touch with the pleasure side, but if you're not fasting or you're not exercising a lot or you're not hiking, you don't get in touch with the hunger side. And so I think you bring up a good point. Now, why are you intermittently fasting?
I've just, I've read some things, and I don't know if it's, you know, it hasn't been studied a whole lot still yet, but I've just read some things that it could, there could be some health benefits, like lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure. Stuff
so
like
are
that.
You doing it because you want to lose weight or cholesterol? Why are you doing it?
Honestly, yeah. When you ask me this, I don't know why I'm still doing it. I don't know if this is life now. This is how I do it. I'm just doing it.
But that might be a way that you keep your weight under control. That being the big, big issue in Wisconsin. If you look overall, 45 to 55% of the people in the state want to lose weight. That's really an issue. Mm-hmm. And the idea of intermittent fasting, I think is a great idea, because it's clear from this exercise, when you're hungry, there are different receptors in your brain that are working, and they're not just the pleasure receptors. I mean, you know, the other day I was out with my son, Zach, and with Penny, and with Louisa, my daughter-in-law, and our two kids, and we were in the boat, wonderful Lake Monona, and we had sandwiches that we got. I can't remember exactly which sandwich shop we got it at. Firehouse Sandwiches. They're really, really good. And half a sandwich, they were gigantic sandwiches. Half a sandwich was enough for me. But I looked at the other half and I thought, hey, this looks really good. And I ate it. Mm-hmm. Now, I really didn't need those many calories at all. But I ate it because it tasted good. It looked good. Yeah. The first sandwich, I was hungry. The first half. The second half, I just ate it because it was there.
Boat sandwich, right? It's there. You're on a boat. Eat it.
But the reality is that's not the right answer. The right answer is take half the sandwich, because you will eat the other half. And we are not as much in touch with that circuitry of appetite as we are with that circuitry of pleasure. So intermittent fasting may be a way that a lot of Americans lose weight. And according to this research out of Baylor, there are different serotonin pathways, and that might be the cure.
Again, the number to call with your question is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Leave a voicemail anytime for Dr. Zorba. All right, back to those voicemails now. Let's hear now from a caller in Edmond, Oklahoma.
I just heard the doctor talk about people recording doctor's visits. And I'm wondering if any of the new medical records, the electronic medical records, has that capability. So a doctor could say, I'm going to record my instructions and I'm going to send it to you through my chart or whatever patient app you're using. Thanks very much.
Now, this one interests me, Zorba, actually, just because when I go for a doctor visit, it seems like half the information I kind of forget because you're getting so much thrown at you. So it would be great to have some kind of record of everything.
Right. Right now, as far as I know, they're in Epic, our electronic medical record. I haven't seen where you can actually record the visit. And there's some interesting issues about recording a visit. HIPAA, does the record HIPAA, which has to do with confidentiality. What happens with the recording? What happens if it gets somewhere else? So there are a lot of issues that I think are involved with recording, certainly visual recording versus other. But right now, as far as I know, they're not in the electronic record. They may be something in the future. Lots of things happen. But you're right. There's so much thrown at you. What would you actually like to look at and review? And so that might be something that happens in the future. I kind of have mixed feelings about recordings in some ways. I don't have mixed feelings about like recording instructions. But I don't know how intrusive that is. And then I always have a fear of whether or not something like that gets leaked. And a recording right. that gets leaked is much, much worse than even a simple record that might get leaked. But anyway, as far as I know, not there, probably on the horizon, given the way things are going in medicine.
Zorba, have you ever had a patient pull their phone out and ask to just do like an audio recording of the patient visit?
Maybe once or twice. And what I've said is, if you want to do it, that's fine. I'll tell you when we can do it.
Okay.
And so, and then because I get to choose, it's a recording of me. And so I don't remember exactly what I did, but I decided I want to know when I'm being recorded. And then at that point, I'm going to be pretty factual in what we talk about. But often in the office, I'm asking them other things because I know them really well. How's your family? How are things? And we're talking about that. If I'm being recorded, I wouldn't do any of that. I would be very matter of fact. This is what we're doing. And I think from an instruction point of view, I like the idea. Mm-hmm. But from a point of view of the interaction with the patient, I myself would find it intrusive. And with a recording, you've got to get permission from both sides. I mean, it's not just the patient that wants it recorded. It's also the physician who wants it recorded. And if you've ever looked at a recording of yourself, Carl, I bet you have. It's totally different when you're kind of doing what we're doing right now.
Right.
You've got to watch every single word
right.
because we interpret things in our brain while we're talking. And on a recording, you might say something that you don't, you know, might something that can be taken in a way differently than you expected it because you corrected it a minute or 2 minutes down the line.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. But before the break, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on our Facebook page. So time again for Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
All right, Zorba, you recently posted a photo on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page, and it looks like a kind of an old photo of you and some colleagues, and the caption reads,
"Oh, yes, right.
I'm a graduate student here in molecular biology at the University of Wisconsin presenting my research."
Right.
It's a great old photo, and can you maybe describe it a little bit?
The research actually wasn't very good, and that's when I realized I did not want to do bench science. I had worked on research with Dr. Robert Auerbach, who still is alive, by the way, in his 90s, works on a great project called the Odyssey Project, which he supports that helps, that basically helps students in a financial way go through the university. Anyway, I was working on sheep red blood cells, trying to prove something with immunizations and, you know, and macrophages. And my research was sort of come see, come saw minimally, but I was presenting it. So I was dressed in my suit, my tie, I was presenting it. And there was a punch bowl in the back that was filled with punch and Everclear. So
what?
Everclear Sinclair is like 95% alcohol.
Right.
So you take like a fruit punch. It was probably like Hawaiian punch in a can. And then you pour Everclear in to taste. And so I was dressed. I had a full head of hair and a mustache. And
oh, yeah. Did that help your presentation, the Everclear punch?
It helped my presentation, but it didn't help my research. Okay. My research didn't result in anything. But my research resulted in the fact that I didn't want to do this. And I was going to go to medical school instead of being a researcher. And that turned out to be a good result of the research.
All right. It's a great old photo, and we got a lot of comments underneath it. I'll just read a couple of a sampling here. Kathy in Paris, Kentucky asked, what year is this? And then she says, keep on with the wonderful work. What year was this?
1969.
Mike in Hollis, Michigan said, I first thought you might be preparing to open Al Capone's vaults. So that's a reference to Geraldo Rivera on his old show in the 80s, and he had a big to-do about opening Al Capone's vaults. Turns out I think there was nothing really in there but some old items or something. I think Mike's saying that you kind of resemble Geraldo Rivera there in the picture.
Hey, not bad.
Have you gotten that before ever?
I've gotten Paul Sotman, who was mayor of Madison.
Oh, sure.
I gotten my, that,
it's that's, the stash. That's the it's got to be the stash, right?
The stash and the hair when I had it.
Related to the stash, Jeannie in Wisconsin wrote, I thought he was Borat.
That's funny. Borat probably wasn't born at the time of this. That's right. Borat was probably not born, and his parents probably weren't even together because he's a young guy. That's yes.
And finally, Zorba, Mike in Lebanon, Oregon posted the following. I've been in medicine 40 years, and I've always loved your show. Your advice is practical, and your delivery is empathetic but direct. I hope you have a long run.
Oh, thank you. So nice. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And the fact is, we have had a long run. So thank you very much.
That's right. Thanks for all the Facebook comments. And if you have a healthy living question for the good doc, just post on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right. More of your calls to come, more of your emails, and Zorba will be dropping in on Tom Clark in his Kitchen of Miracles.
Legendary. Mystic. Mythical Kitchen of Miracles. I love
M's.
It. I love
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
That's right.
I think he's busy prepping the ingredients right now, right? Actually, those ingredients would be for barley salad with dates. So stick around for that. So all that's coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Now look, we know you tune into this show to hear Zorba's healthy living advice, but you also show up with an empty stomach and an open mind to see what celebrity chef Tom Clark is cooking up from his world-class menu. So let's head over to Tom's Kitchen of Wonder, where he and Zorba are working on a tasty recipe for barley salad with dates.
Hi, Zorba.
Hi, Tom. I love what he said. Empty stomach and open mind versus an open stomach and an empty mind. That would be a totally different thing. Well, Tom, you love to cook, don't you?
Uh-huh.
You love to eat. Well, do you love to eat, actually?
I like to eat. I don't live to eat. I like to eat. Yeah.
So what'd you have for breakfast today?
Almost always the same. Cereal. Some raisins on top, mm-hmm. orange juice, coffee. Uh-huh. That's uh-huh. about it.
Do you have the same cereal or different cereals?
The same.
Every day?
Of course.
Of course. For years.
Ooh, hey, I have different kinds of cereal. You have one kind you like. That's what you eat.
All right. Well, our recipe has nothing whatsoever to do with cereal. Nothing at all. It's barley salad with dates. Now, did your mother ever make barley?
No.
She didn't put it like in soups and things?
I don't remember ever having barley.
You know, my mother would throw barley into beef soup. It was like, it was to make it sort of thicker and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I had barley with soups, and I've got barley around the house. Rarely do I use it. I usually only use it with soups, but this is a barley salad with dates. And if you've never tried barley or you did in the past, this is kind of worth cooking because it's a different taste on barley. It's not used in a warm product like soup. It's cold. So let's do this recipe. Start out with 1 cup of pearl barley. That's what it's called, pearl barley.
Well, why is it pearl barley? What is that?
Who knows? That's what it's called. It's white, kind of looks like it. They call it pearl barley. Come on. I mean, you know, ask me questions. I don't have all the answers. It's called pearl barley.
Okay, a cup of that.
We're going to use some kosher salt and pepper, but we do that all the time. Kosher plum
pepper. Golden pepper, yeah.
1 tablespoonful of cumin seeds.
A big key? Cumin seeds.
You know, I don't know if they're called cumin seeds or cumin seeds. Maybe somebody who's listening to the show will correct me.
I would guess, of course, I don't know anything about it, but I would say cumin seeds, right?
Yeah, you would guess. So we both decided it's cumin seeds. Now we'll find out what our listeners say.
You said one thing, I said the other. I said cumin, and you said cumin.
Yeah, you say tomato, I say tomato. A third of a cup of extra virgin olive oil. No trouble with pronunciation of that, right?
A third of a cup extra virgin olive oil.
A teaspoon of ground turmeric. And I know it's turmeric. It's not turmeric.
Yeah, a little tea ground turmeric. Aren't there some shallots in there, too?
No, there are some. Four shallots, thinly sliced. Thank you. 4 thinly sliced shallots. Juice of 1 lemon.
Okay. The juice of one lemon.
A cup of flat leaf parsley sprigs. Okay. Now, we're going to add some green into this. If you like cilantro, it's a cup of cilantro and a cup of fresh mint if you like mint. Okay.
A cup of cilantro and a cup of mint. Well, who wouldn't like cilantro and who wouldn't like mint?
Well, Penny doesn't like mint. If you say the word mint to her, she'll leave the room. But she likes cilantro. But a lot of people don't like cilantro. And for this recipe, if you don't like cilantro and mint, add a little more parsley or add some other greens. You could add a cup of any other green that you like. But those are really going to make it very good. And then you need 5 pitted dates chopped. You got to pit them. Otherwise, you're going to break your tooth.
Yeah, of course. 5. You don't forget your 5 pitted dates chopped.
You know, Tom, you are still spot on because you started laughing when I said you would break a tooth on the pits. So that's exactly it. All right. So let's do it. So first of all, bring the parsley to boil with 3 cups of water in a medium saucepan. So let me explain a little. I'm sorry, the barley. Let me explain a little bit about it. Read the directions on the box of barley because there's quick, like with oats, there's quick cooked barley, there's medium cooked barley, and there's sort of old fashioned barley. And they all use different amounts of water, but follow the instructions on the box. Yeah. So bring the barley to cook with 3 cups of water if you're using the correct directions. Follow the instructions. Add 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt. In a medium saucepan, toast the cumin seeds very lightly over medium heat till fragrant. That's going to be about 1 to 2 minutes. Shut off the heat. Remove the skillet. Add the extra virgin olive oil and the shallots over. Once again, put it back on after you do it because you want to heat it just a little bit and cook until they're golden and crispy, about maybe anywhere between 8 and 9 minutes long. Transfer to a paper towel. Okay, so you put them on a paper towel. Leave the oil in the pan. Then with that oil, you may get a little more olive oil in there. Combine the turmeric, lemon juice, and the cumin seeds and oil with a little salt and pepper. Then add the barley to that. Mix it all up together. Then add the dates and combine it. Now, it seems to be a lot. You're going to put the crispy shallots on the top of it. It seems like a lot of potchkin. Potchkin, by the way, is what you would say if you spoke Yiddish. It seems like a lot of potchkin because it is. It actually takes a while to get this. But think about it. You've got barley on the bottom. If you've never tasted barley, it's really interesting. You've got lemon, which has a very distinct taste. You've got turmeric, which is very sort of Indian. You've got extra virgin olive oil. And if you like it, you've got parsley, cilantro, mint, and then you've got the taste of dates. It's a very, very interesting, exotic side dish that I highly recommend for anyone who's looking for exotic cooking. Try this recipe, and when you try it, I want to see comments on our website if people are really interested, because it's a very, very interesting recipe. It does takes a little bit of work, but it's worth it.
Okay, well,
all right.
Let's send it back to Carl now.
Yeah, back to the grind.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Tom. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime to leave a question for Dr. Zorba. Let's get back to those voicemails now. We're going to hear two food-related calls. The first caller is from Sheldon, Wisconsin, and then we'll hear from a caller who lives in the same town as one of my favorite record stores, Stardust Records, and that's the village of Thienesville, Wisconsin.
I have a question for Dr. Zorba. Been meaning to ask it for many years. We have all kinds of fake sugar. I remember when saccharin, you know, all that stuff. We've got all these fake sugars. Why is there no fake salt? We want to know. Thanks.
My boyfriend drinks a lot of Mountain Dew. Trying to get him off onto something healthier like coffee, but it's going to be a chore. Is the real Mountain Dew, which has real sugar in it, better than the other Mountain Dew? Thanks.
Well, first of all, the real Mountain Dew has 1 teaspoon of sugar per ounce. So you drink 16 ounces, you're getting 16 teaspoons of sugar. You're getting 16 sugar cubes. And if you do the math, it's 15 calories per teaspoon of sugar. That's a lot of calories you don't need. It's basically a candy bar. That's roughly what they are. You're drinking a candy bar. So if you have 4 Mountain Dews, you're getting 4 Snickers. I mean, that's roughly how many calories you're getting. And that's an approximation. Same thing, by the way, with orange juice. Pretty much the same thing with milk. You drink 4 big glasses of milk, you're having a lot of calories there. You get more protein in milk, but you're getting too many calories. So you don't want to drink your calories. And so let's look at the artificial things. First of all, why have we not developed an artificial salt? I have no idea, but salt just seems to be different. If you look at potassium salt, which actually is good for you, it has a very bitter taste. And I bet you that those chemists are working on artificial salt. I am sure they're doing that.
Well, is it MSG kind of that, or is it not?
No,
is that totally different?
MSG means umami. If you put MSG on your tongue, go get Accent at the grocery store, put it on your tongue, it doesn't taste anything like salt. Nothing like salt at all.
Okay.
It changes the way we perceive food, but it is not salt. So to date, there is no artificial salt, but I bet there's lots and lots of research on artificial salt, and I haven't seen anything come out of it. Now, as for all the artificial sweeteners, so you have saccharin. The feds try to take it off the market because in enormous quantities, it caused some sort of cancer in laboratory rats, and there was a huge pushback by men and women in the 60s and said, don't take away our saccharin. So the feds were forced to bring it back, you know, albeit with a little thing on there that this causes cancer in laboratory animals. Everyone sort of poo-pooed it. And how bad saccharin is for you, I don't know. But Sweet and Low contains saccharin, and I can't remember what other artificial sweetener it is, because saccharin is sweet but has a bitter aftertaste. Then you had sucralose. Sucralose was developed by Abbott back in the 60s, and sucralose was a great sweetener. And they found out it caused some kind of cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer. I don't remember which kind. But then they took it off the market. Nothing came out after that until NutraSweet, which is aspartame. That was produced by the Cereal Company, which, by the way, produced the first birth control pill. They made a gazillion dollars off of it. And that's the combination of amino acids. That is the most commonly studied artificial sweetener. And actually, there's been no study that has definitively shown that it's bad for you, even though a lot of people think it's bad for you. And once again, it's artificial. You may have to make a decision like that. Artificial is the opposite of organic. And then you've got sucralose, which is Splenda, which is now a generic, once again, artificially made. And that's because we humans want sweets.
We want sweet.
But we don't want the calorie. We want sweet. We want sweet. We don't want calories. We don't want calories.
That's a nice jingle. That's catchy. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's keep those voicemails rolling in. Let's hear from a caller now in New York.
I'd like to know about Conn's disease. C-O-N-N-S. I think it's a syndrome rather than a disease. Thank you.
Now, I'm not exactly sure what causes it. And because it's a syndrome, that means we don't know what causes it. When you have a syndrome, it means you've got three or four things together that you can't postulate into one disease. So for instance, we know when your thyroid level is low, it's because of your thyroid. And we just give you medication for thyroid. But example, another syndrome example is something called Marfan's. Marfan syndrome is associated with problems with your aorta, a tall stature. It was thought that Lincoln might have Marfan's, very long fingers, and for some, early death because of the problems with it. A Down syndrome was a syndrome for years. We didn't know what it was caused by until we actually looked and found it was a genetic defect, trisomy 21. But prior to that, we had no idea what Down's was. So Kahn syndrome is where you produce it's primary hyperaldosteronemia, which basically is produced by the kidney. Aldosterone is produced by a kidney. It has a regulation effect with hypertension. There are drugs that actually work for that, that are anti-aldosterone drugs. And we don't understand it. We have ideas of how to treat it, but we don't know exactly how to understand it. And so that's where it fits. There's a great big question mark in it. But once again, with medicine, lots of technology. Stay tuned. We don't have the answer. I wish that we did. But there are some treatments for it because there are drugs that work against aldosterone, which is one of the hormones in the body, which are very important for the production of blood pressure. And when you've got hyperaldosteronemia, you end up having high blood pressure and you've got to reduce it. Otherwise, you're at risk for stroke and kidney disease.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, as you know, we get so many questions from our wonderful listeners, but we also get calls from those listeners who just want to share a comment or a health tip. So time again for that segment that we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Yes, we do. We do appreciate it. All right, Zorba, I thought about for a while here how to set up this caller's comment, but sometimes it's just better to let the tape roll on this one. So
sounds good to me, Carol. Let her roll.
Let her rip here. All right, this is a caller in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Please, please, how can any producer let him keep mispronouncing common words like garbanzo? Do your job. Fix this. It's not garbanzo. Stop it.
So I guess that one's on me. She directed that at the producer, so I guess it's my fault that you're saying garbanzo.
So it's garbanzo, not garbanzo, it's garbanzo.
According to the Knoxville listener, yes. I mean, that's no how idea. I say it.
Now, wait a second. Garbanzo. Look it up, Carl. Go ahead, look it up right now.
Look it up. Okay. I have a computer right here, so I can look up garbanzo.
Google. Get the pronunciation. Let's see what Google says. Go ahead. Play it.
Okay.
Garbanzo.
Did you get that?
Garbanzo. Garbanzo.
Where do you
like
get
Garrett.
This extra syllable? No. They're saying garbanzo.
Do it again. Do it again. It's in my brain. Do it again. I'm a slow learner. Do it
okay.
again.
Okay. Here we go.
Garbanzo.
Got it.
Garbanzo.
Garbanzo. Why am I pronouncing it garbanzo?
Garbanzo.
Garbanzo. Got it. I got it.
Who
Thank
did
you.
This to you at a young age? Did somebody garbanzo. Say garbanzo to
My
you?
My mother never even knew what it was. Garbanzo. Garbanzo.
Do you think
got
that'll
it.
Stick, though? I don't know that that's going to stick.
I don't
stick.
Know if it'll stick. Hey, I got to try. I'm educable. I'm in my 70s. Garbanzo. I got it. Okay. Sorry, listeners. I have failed. I will do better.
Sorry, Knoxville. All right, 800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. But before the break, Zorba, let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
All right, Zorba, this email came to us from a listener in Spokane, Washington, named Bonnie, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. I read your column in the Spokesman Review. In today's column, you recommended tea, specifically green tea, and to moderate alcohol to live longer. I hate tea and I don't drink alcohol because I'm a diabetic. I refuse to eat or drink anything I detest just because somebody says it will help me live longer or be healthier. I eat a very healthful, low-carb diet with plenty of vegetables as well as meat and fish, all of which I enjoy. I keep reading I should eat Brussels sprouts. Yuck. Not going to happen. I'm 68 years old, and maybe choking down a cup or two of green tea every day might add a few days or even weeks to my life.
Not worth it.
But it's not worth it to me. I prefer to eat what tastes good, not what tastes nasty.
Right.
Why do doctors and dietitians recommend so much awful food? Or, for diabetics, unsuitable foods? Okay, end of rant. Keep up the good work. Most of your columns are interesting and helpful.
Well, first of all, you can drink alcohol as a diabetic. It just counts as a carbohydrate. So there are a lot of diabetics who drink alcohol. You don't have to, by any means. And the reality is green tea, I mean, I don't drink green tea because I don't particularly like it. I'm not going to drink green tea every day. So what you do is you pick, like a cafeteria, you pick things that produce longevity. So first of all, you got to do some kind of exercise, and you pick an exercise you like. And second of all, variety of fruits and veggies do make a difference. You pick the fruits and veggies you're going to eat. Now, I happen to like Brussels sprouts, but frankly, if I didn't like them, I wouldn't eat them. And if I didn't like green tea, which I don't, I wouldn't drink it. Now, as for alcohol, I do have a beer often, maybe once every night or once every other night, or a glass of wine. But if I couldn't drink it for any reason or I didn't like it, I would pick something else. So thanks for your rant. I appreciate it. And basically, maybe what we should do is make Brussels sprout juice. I wonder how that would sell.
That's got to be good. Did Zorba say something that was tough to swallow?
Disgusting.
Let us know by posting on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at...
Or Brussels sprout juice recipe at zorba@wpr.org. Maybe one of our listeners will make a tasty or non-tasty Brussels sprout juice that we can actually put on the air. That would be interesting.
Cannot wait for that, Zorba. More of your calls are coming up. We have another thought-provoking topic to discuss, and Zorba will be answering more listener emails. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where anytime you can leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. But before we hear from more of our listeners, Zorba, tell us about a new study that looked at warning labels on cigarette packaging.
Well, there actually are that third study and a different study that goes along with this. But if you take warning labels like cigarettes can cause cancer, and instead you make it graphic, where it shows people who have cancer, people who really are dying of cancer, or they show lungs, the intervention, in other words, just that picture intervention, can possibly, most likely, will drop the smoking rate by another 2-5%. And that's been shown in study after study. So, what percentage of people in Wisconsin, adults, do you think still smoke?
Percentage?
Take a guess.
Maybe in the 20s?
Well, it's,
the 20s?
It's 18%. It's below the 20s, 18, 17%. But it's stuck there. It's totally stuck there. And why is it stuck there? A whole bunch of reasons. It's stuck, of course. We know people in poverty are more likely to smoke. We have no explanation for that. None at all. We know everyone knows smoking is bad for you. But we know that it's really hard. Once you start, it's hard to stop. Now, the other interesting study is that expectant fathers, in other words, if a father is told during one of the pregnancy visits, comes in with his wife or his girlfriend, who might be pregnant, and they say, look, secondhand smoke is bad for the baby with a simple intervention. And then they get a prescription for nicotine gum or a nicotine patch. All of a sudden, the number of fathers who quit is something like 10%. In other words, 10 to 15%. So these simple interventions make a difference. Now, have you ever seen in other countries like in Canada, where they have a lower smoking rate, have you ever seen the pictures on those cigarette packages?
I've seen them online. Yeah. Yep. They're pretty graphic.
They really are graphic. And somehow saying it's going to cause cancer is not the same as looking at somebody dying of cancer or looking at a black lung that is a black lung from cigarettes. Very important. I want to talk a little bit about vaping here. If you're going to vape to stop smoking, I have patients asking me, is vaping better than smoking? And the answer in my mind, undoubtedly, yes. There's no doubt about it. I tell people, if you can't stop smoking and you've tried 4 or 5 times, go to vaping. And if you can't get off vaping, try with nicotine gum. And nicotine gum, we know, is actually safer than vaping. So some people, 5% of the people who start the gum, continue the gum for the rest of their life, and it's safe. It's not combustible tobacco. It's not tobacco at all. It's nicotine. So if you've got a vape, better than cigarettes. If you've got to chew, if you want to stop chewing, gum is much better. The real issue is stop tobacco products altogether, and let's get ugly, ugly photos on those cigarette packages now.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. That's the number to call if you'd like to leave us a question anytime. And let's get back to those voicemails now. Here is one from a caller in Deerfield, Wisconsin.
My question is this. I've had some back surgery that didn't turn out well at all, and trying to understand, I can't figure out what's wrong exactly. But I have an extra vertebra. I think it's like a T12 or right in that vicinity. There's an extra one, a partial rib. And my question is, how does that affect where the nerves come out? Does the L1 become an L2 nerve root, or the T12, or just how does that sort out? Or does that extra vertebra just not have any nerves coming out in that area at all? Thank you.
Well, the only way to know for sure where the nerves come out is to do an MRI scan, look at the nerves. And then quite often, you have to do an injection into the nerve to see whether or not the pain, especially if you've got low back pain and you've had surgery, where the pain is coming from. Unfortunately, back surgery is not 100%. And many people who have back surgery continue to have pain, and often they have to have a revision. And then there's something called a failed back, which is a terrible, terrible term. And a failed back means despite one or two or sometimes three surgeries, the back pain does not go away. And that's because when you look at the pain, look at pain in the back, it's not like an old-fashioned telephone where there's a wire that goes down and you cut the wire or you stop the wire from being pushed and that gets rid of the pain. The pain is much more complex than that, and we don't really understand it. It's probably more like a web. I mean, when I look up something on Google, I have no idea what computer it's coming from, but it's coming from some computer. That's what the answer is from. So the long and the short answer is you need an MRI scan to do it. And the only reason you would want to know something like that would be to know where an injection may be or where another surgery might be important to be able to help you with your back pain. And I'm so sorry your back pain has continued. It's a real bugaboo with people who've had surgery. It's nowhere near 100%, which is why you need to go to a good surgeon who knows whether or not the surgery is going to do something.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let me find my Slim Jim so I can jimmy open the Zorba Pastor On Your Health inbox and take a listener email. Susan from Butte, Montana sent us the following question. Dear Dr. Zorba, my husband and I enjoy listening to your show and learn something new each time. When we were children, our mothers gave us Coke syrup for our upset stomachs. As I recall, it seemed to work rather well, but I'm not sure if it was the syrup doing anything or just the lovely taste and the thought that it would make me feel better. I prefer not to take unnecessary medications. I see my healthcare provider twice a year and stay on top of my health. Recently, I've had some bouts of upset stomach, and I'm curious if the Coke syrup does actually have benefits. If not, I'll just bring it up at my next appointment and take some Pepto until then.
Well, my mother gave me Coke syrup too. And the reality is, it is a lovely taste, and it's the TLC that comes with your mother giving you a teaspoon of something.
What is it? What's in it?
Coke.
It's just Coke
syrup. I think it's the syrup.
Okay.
Yeah, you never knew that, did you?
No.
You see? And do you ever get an upset stomach?
Sure, yeah.
Well, how about your kids? Do your kids get an upset stomach?
Yeah, sure.
Well, maybe give them Coke syrup. I mean, basically, it's nothing but Coca-Cola in a sweet syrup form. Does it soothe the stomach? I don't know. My mother gave it to me and it got better. On the other hand, my mother also gave me castor oil. And let me tell you something. That is not something you ever want to try. Coke syrup, yes. Castor oil, uh-uh.
Do you have a question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page. Or if you want to take a more surreptitious approach, you can send us an email at.
You know, I gotta wait. And I gotta see you at Comedy Central sometime. Zorba.
I'll never make it.
WPR.org. Yeah, but as a writer, you might make it. You
maybe,
know.
Maybe. I doubt it. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's now go to a voicemail from a caller in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Hi, I'm calling in regards to some symptoms I have been experiencing in the morning time shortly after I wake up, which is a freeze in my brain or something like it's foggy and my brain stopped working and I have to like lay down for a while. I have a chronic allergic rhinitis and I have IBS-C and I also have tension headaches. So I'm wondering, how can I get rid of that every morning type of headache? Thank you.
Well, chronic headaches are a big issue. They're not a small issue. I'm a headache person. I get headaches from allergies. I used to get a lot of migraine headaches. I don't seem to get them anymore. I used to get tension headaches. They don't seem to get them, but I do have this chronic headache that occurs on and off. It's very hard. So one of the things you want to do is establish a relationship with a healthcare provider, physician, nurse practitioner, PA, who's interested in headaches. That really is step number one. Step number two is to try to figure out an experiment to see whether or not something you take chronically will keep the headache from occurring and causing the brain fog in the morning. So one drug, pregabalin, pregabalin, used to be branded under the name Lyrica, is a remarkable drug that helps often with chronic headaches. 25 milligrams or 50 milligrams at nighttime can help keep your headaches away in the morning. Other thing, an aspirin at nighttime may help, an anti-inflammatory like naproxen, two Aleve tablets, which are 440 milligrams of naproxen, might help. Antihistamines at nighttime may help. There are a whole bunch of different drugs that I think you ought to experiment with, because if this happens on a regular basis, you want to figure out what may help you at nighttime. And there is help on there. You might not solve all of your headaches, but you might solve some of them. And for some people with chronic headaches, believe it or not, botulism toxin, which is in the back, which is Botox, can actually get rid of chronic headaches for 6 to 12 months in some people. And neurologists who are often now trained in how to give Botox, and soon there'll be a generic Botox that will be used, and it's going to be much cheaper than the name brand. That can make a difference too. So practitioner who specializes in headaches, that's the way to go.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime. Leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. All right, before we head out, Zorba, let's open up the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox again and share a listener tip. This is actually a boating tip, Zorba. You're a
boating,
boater, right?
Boating. Well, I get on a boat, but I call myself a boater. My son brings it in and out of the dock. I don't think I'd call me. And if you can't dock your boat, are you a boater? Now, that's a Wisconsin question. Do you dock a boat? Can you dock a boat?
I can dock a boat. I grew up on a lake during summers. So, yeah.
No thought about docking a boat. You don't even give it a second thought.
Nope. See, do you drive the boat when you're out in the middle then of the lake?
I do. When I'm out in the middle, I drive the boat. But I'm a city boy. I grew up in Chicago. Yeah. I know how to parallel park a car in a tight space. And I know how to find a parking space anywhere. But I can't dock a boat. That is the difference between the city boy and the country boy. Dock a car, dock a boat. Dock a car, dock a boat.
Sounds like another jingle, Zorba.
Oh, you know what? But I can parallel park in the smallest space without having to do a second one. I mean, that's what I learned at 16.
Especially with that teal Mazda Miata you got. That thing can really squeeze in there.
Turquoise. It's not teal. A lot of people call it teal. It's turquoise, man.
Blasphemy.
1958 GM Chevy turquoise.
All right. The following email came to us from an anonymous listener who writes, I read with interest your recent column on boating safety. I used to work for the Department of Natural Resources, and many years ago, a colleague told me a story. The story was that a high percentage, about 40 to 60% of the male bodies recovered from drownings had their zippers down.
Huh.
He proposed the DNR do a PSA, a public service announcement, on this issue, but was dismissed. Anyway, I thought you might find this thought interesting. So if you have to pee off the boat, put a life jacket on. Thanks for your work. I enjoy it, Zorba.
Well, actually, that if that's the case, well, it is interesting. There's something. First of all, when you're urinating, you engage in something called a vasovagal response. And you can have something called micturition syncope. In other words, you can faint when you're standing up and urinating. It is not a rare form of fainting. It is a form of fainting. Add a little bit of alcohol in there, and you're more likely to faint. And so the idea that you may drown when you're urinating. Also, if you drink too much, that's of course an issue. And if you drink too much, you're going to want to urinate more. So it might just be a moniker, if you will, because guys are drinking too much, so they're drunk and they fall into the lake. On the other hand, the reality is if you're peeing off the side of the boat and standing up, you might get dizzy from the vasovagal response, and then you might fall off the boat. And if you're drinking, you don't have a life jacket. So I'm trying to figure out how you would do a public service announcement. I got it. It's in my brain now. Hey, guys, pee off a boat, wear a life jacket. We see, but we got to get a jingle in there. So, I mean, I would like our listeners to please phone in a jingle for pee off the boat, put on a jacket, or figure out a way that we can actually do a PSA. We might save lives. I'm tongue-in-cheek here, but I'm serious here because drowning is an issue, but we've got to have a slogan and we've got to have a jingle to make it work. But it is a real thing. Micturition syncope, dizziness with that, standing on a boat, I can see the whole thing.
Do you have a health tip or maybe just a boating tip for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or you can send us an email at...
Or a jingle.
Or a jingle.
Zorba at WPR.org. Remember, if you have a jingle, you have to sing it.
Stay well, Zorba.
I love it. Stay well, Carl.
If you missed anything during the show or you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. And please do visit the Zorba Pastor On Your Health Facebook page for Zorba's frequent coronavirus updates. Zorba Pastor On Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark and Wilfred Brimley, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor On Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.